this next presentation is actually the State of the Internet panel that took place during Sans Fire. Every year at Sans Fire, we do a kind of the State of the Internet roundtable with all the Internet Storm Center handlers that are at the conference, and this is a recording of that presentation.
Okay, welcome. My name is Mark Sox. These are handlers that I will introduce in just a second, and I think Johannes just about has the slide put together. You can see we kind of build these things on the fly. This is how we run the Internet, is we just do everything on the fly. There we go. Now I've got some audio. I trust that everybody who's not here, because we have like, 800 people at the conference and about 8 of y'all here. So everybody else is at the ballgame, right? This is good stuff. So welcome to the 2009 State of the Internet panel. I'm going to do some quick introductions, and then I'm going to let Johannes talk a little bit about the Internet Storm Center, where we came from, how we got here, some D-Shield techie information. Then I'm going to take a few minutes and just kind of recap the last year, from July of last year up to June of this year, just the highlights of what's been going on, things we've been working on, the stuff that's kept us up at night. And then I'm going to allow each of the handlers to talk for a minute or two about something that they did in the past year, some incident, some event, something that meant deep insight to them, which may only take about 20 seconds for Mark Hoffman, but that's okay. And he'll also do it upside down because he's from Australia and his time is totally backwards. Once we're done with that, we'll just go into a Q&A. This is your opportunity to get to know the handlers, to ask them all your embarrassing questions, and let them embarrass you back. We've got a little pile of stickers here, so any good question gets to have a good Storm Center sticker that you can put on the back of your computer. Be sure if you put it on there so that you can read it when the lid is up. Don't put it on upside down, or it makes no sense. I bring to you to my left here, Deb Hale. Say hello, Deb.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Mary Nichols. Say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Mark Hoffman, say good day.
Good day.
Good day. There we go. Use that Aussie accent. Johannes Ulrich.
Here.
No, guten Abend. Joe. Say hello, Joel.
Not right.
Yeah, it's just not right. See, people on the internet confuse NetDev and Joel, and we don't know why. But
we look nothing alike.
Yeah, I suppose so. Pedro, all the way from Brazil via, where do you live now?
Santa Clara.
Santa Clara. He's the only one that doesn't look like a handler because he just landed. But we'll get him squared away here in just a moment with all the other stuff. Pedro Bueno. All right, so who we got today? John, what, does that hat actually fit you?
No, not really.
No, okay. So, John, you're Mr. Time. What time is it?
What time is it?
What time would you like it to be?
What time would I like it to be?
7:33.
Yeah. The reason I say that, of course, maybe you might have seen John on TV last year, but he was on the Daily Show or something like that. Yeah. Stewart Show. Yeah. Okay. So Steve says, surrender your privacy. Very, very cool. Okay. Steve Hall, another one of our Outside of America handlers. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, Mark.
Yeah, we want to hear your British accent. Come on.
That was my British accent.
You're going to talk like a Brit, you know? We can't hear you. Your mic's not on. Hey, techie guys, is this mic turned on over there? Ah, there we go.
Speak into the mic.
There we go. And Chris, all the way down the end, Chris Carboni, say hello, Chris. Well, Chris has his own private microphone down there. Okay, so we'll let each of you guys talk a little bit in just a moment. Johannes, if you want to step up or sit where you are, tell us a little bit about how the Storm Center got started. You've been here since the beginning of the ordeal. And some information about D-Shield as well.
Thanks, Mark, for the introduction. Well, in the Storm Center, it's sort of a merger of two sites, actually, Incidents.org and D-Shield. Anybody remembers Incidents.org?
Google.
Sorry?
Google remembers
it. Yeah, actually, a lot of people come to the site via old links that Google spits out and then have SSL certificate issues because they come to the site via instance.org, which is still, I guess, the mic is run by someone. Okay. Yeah, it's just the level that I'm trying to counteract. So anyway, Instance.org was started in 99 around the kind of the intention was somewhat to help with the Y2K transition and coordinate some of that. One of the nice parts of it was that people really liked the idea of exchanging information, so it survived Y2K. It wasn't really shut down or so. And that idea flourished. Now, independently of that, it was over Thanksgiving weekend in 2000. I coded up this IP shield to collect firewall logs. And well, it took off pretty quickly. First ran off my basement, and fans became aware of it and decided, hey, maybe a good idea to put Instance.org and something like the shield together into a new site. And that's sort of how the Internet Storm Center was born. Hard to tell when it actually was born. I think the first Internet Storm Center site probably went live in 2002. I have to verify the exact date when it went live. And, well, the rest is history. We have now about 38 handlers that are active and that are enjoying themselves by writing diaries and making us do stuff and having a real good time with that. Great feedback also from the users. Really, one of the great things with the Storm Center is that it's really a collaborative community. It's not just the handlers. Like, we don't really know anything. It's really all the users writing in and telling us what we don't know and actually making us correct our diaries. The best diaries, I think, always are if you get a report in, somebody's seeing something odd, like an odd packet or something, we just post it out, hey, something odd is happening. They have no idea what it is. And then everybody writes in and tells us exactly what's happening. And that's really how it's supposed to work. We don't always have all the answers. But
yes,
over the years, over the years we really have gotten good at hiding that ignorance behind all of our contributors. So now let me go through and everybody give their 1 to 2 minutes.
Sir? That'll be next.
Sit down.
Oh,
they'll get their chance in just a second. See, the thing is, I got to let you guys remember a little reminiscing of what happened over the past year, and then you can think about something that you can talk about, because we're going to pass Mr. Microphone down here, and each of the handlers start all that in. We can do that. We can start with Chris. Yeah. So Chris, you get to go first, but I'm going to give you a few minutes just to think about it, so that's not a problem. By the way, we've got about 35 volunteers. There's only 10 of us sitting here, so there's another 25 you're not seeing that are behind the scenes. These are the handlers. We've also got thousands of people like yourself that send in logs, emails, quite a few of a fan club that send in crazy emails. We've got a large number of the tinfoil hat crowd, I think you know what I'm talking about there, that absolutely convinced that the NSA is reading their minds. We try and provide help. We give them counseling and, you know, advice and things like that. We've got a number of family members that will call or write and thinking that we are the Internet Help Desk and, you know, that we're just there to assist them install their Dell PC and things. So it's quite a collection of things that we get throughout the day. We run a 24-hour shift. When we first started doing this, we thought about how to, you know, what time should we start, and it finally took us a while to figure out. We just go with Zulu time. So at 0000, it doesn't matter what the time zones are looking like, that's when we rotate. So if we're here on the East Coast, that's either 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., depending on daylight savings time or not. In the U.K., what is it? It's midnight, 1 a.m.? Yeah, it's like 0000, right? You guys got it all. 10 a.m. for the Australians. Brazil, you're about like East Coast time when you were there, right? When the handler shift would happen, when you were living in Brazil. Pardon me? 4 hour difference? Yeah, so about like East Coast time, roughly. Yeah, so it's not too bad. So let me just go back and talk a little bit about the past year. All of you remember the Storm botnet? Remember that thing? So that's kind of what was raging this time last year. So summer of last year, that was going around. Also, Dan Kaminsky was making a lot of press with his DNS exploits. Remember that one? Black Hat DEF CON last summer, Dan got up and talked about how this was working. Also at Black Hat DEF CON, there was a big talk on BGP route stealing. You ever go to that talk? This is how, you know, how to steal the Internet. In fact, at DEF CON, they rerouted the entire hotel network all the way to New York and back to Vegas and did it in a hijack mode that you couldn't detect unless you knew how to look at the TTLs, which was really kind of cool because they were doing it live and showing it on the screen. And this scared a lot of the people there because they really hadn't thought about how you can do a route hijack and nobody sees that you're doing it, because you can then, they turned on TTL manipulation and made the time go away. so it looked like there was no hijack happening at all, but in fact the hijack was quite well done. Then Kaminsky says, ah, what if I combine DNS and BGP? And all the place just kind of went nuts at that point. Later in August, we went through a brief hurricane season, nothing compared to like we saw in 2005. Hurricane Gustav was the only big one, but it created, and we saw this kind of as expected, all the crazy websites, you know, people trying to get donations set up. Pretty much any time there's a world event, we always see the fake websites appear. We have we work with one of the many DNS services to alert us, so we'll come up with names ahead of time. We'll pre-populate that database, and then we get an alert once a day for new domain name registrations. This helps us kind of see what's going on. There was I'm taking my notes here. Oh, yeah, good old photo frames came up last summer again. Remember that from a few years ago, the digital photo frame? So that reemerged last summer. Same thing with the USB keys. We saw a little bit of that. As we got into the fall, there was two big deals. One was the U.S. election. Remember how hot and bothered we were in October timeframe? A lot of fake election emails, fake websites, malware connected with it. There were some vulnerabilities in SCADA systems that were no longer just theoretical. CyTech, if you remember, CyTech had some really cool zero-day vulnerabilities. And then we also had the shutdown of Macolo and Atrivo. Any of you follow that? These were ISPs here in the United States that were hosting Russian carders and malware authors and others, electrically hosting them here in the U.S. The FBI and others had been working to get them shut down. What happened was a lot of ISPs more or less ganged up on them and shut off their upstreams, causing these web hosting companies to sit isolated. They, in turn, spam rates went down, but then they went off and found a new upstream. So immediately the spam rate goes back up, and they kept jumping around. Finally, they completely shut down. There was a couple more of these incidents with Brian Krebs over at Washington Post, almost single-handedly took down an ISP. Remember that one from several months ago? Claimed credit for it in his blog. And just about 2 weeks ago, the Federal Trade Commission shut down yet another one. So this continues to be a problem with a lot of the malware, spam sites, and other types of phishing sites electrically hosted in the United States, and then trying to get the actual company that's hosting it to either make it go away or get them shut off. Last October, every October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So last October we did it for the second year in a row. Does anybody remember what the theme was? I know it was 6 or 7 months ago. Any of you guys remember? Incident handling staffs. Very good. Give Mark a sticker so he remembered what it was. Very good. Yeah, so we went through, for those of you who have taken incident handling, remember the five steps, preparation of...
Go on, Mark. Go on.
Pick on Earl, yeah. Preparation, I'll pick identification, eradication, yeah, there we go. All that stuff, yeah. Containment. Yeah, very, very cool. So we did that last October. I don't know what we'll do this coming October. We'll have to come up with something cool for Cybersecurity Awareness Month. As we got into November, of course, the elections came and went, not that much of a big deal. But in the cyber side, a very big deal happened very quietly, and that was the exploitation of a little small Windows vulnerability that most people had never really paid much attention to. They just patched it. And a group over in the Ukraine wrote some malware that later became known as Conficker. And that came out in November very quietly, not a lot of notice on it. We saw it. We've got some diary entries back to last November talking about this malware. But most people weren't really following it. Conficker, as you probably remember, really began to pick up steam in about January, February timeframe. And if you go in our archives, you can see where the diaries, particularly in January, really start picking up on Conficker. The broad media, and particularly the federal government, really didn't come alive until, March 31st, I think? Because Conficker was supposed to do its deed on April 1st. So they kind of woke up the night before and says, Conficker, what's that? What's the Conficker working group? A lot of our handlers were involved behind the scenes in fighting that one. As we got towards the end of the year into December, there was some cuts of the fiber optic cables. Remember that? In the Mediterranean, we had three cables that were cut almost at the same time. There were some more that were cut in January. A lot of people worried about, is this terrorism? Is there something going on? The official story is it was cable cuts due to anchors being dragged across the bottom of the Med. Okay, yeah, whatever you want to believe, right? Anchors cutting cables, sure. I think it was the Australians. But, yeah, Mark's down there scuba diving, thinking he's on the barrier reef, but he's really in the Med.
that was.
Yeah, that's what that was. We said goodbye to a companion organization known as Castle Cops. Do you remember Castle Cops? A big malware site. They closed last December. Just kind of poof, overnight went away. A large amount of data just disappeared. That was a great resource if you wanted to know about malware. There was also a couple of O-days in Internet Explorer. First started in Internet Explorer 8, and then we found out that IE7 and IE6 and IE5 were all vulnerable, so this made for some interesting website attacks, good old drive-bys for anybody running the old version of Internet Explorer. In January, I mentioned Configer earlier. Configer really started to take off after Christmas. We saw some interesting DNS attacks. For those of you who have tracked DNSs, queries for just the dot, in other words, the root. And if you looked in your DNS records, you'd see that with just simple queries for dot. Well, I don't know that we ever got to the bottom of that one as to what was, do you guys remember what was causing it?
It was denial of service, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pardon? Just a denial of service, yeah. So it was real easy to block and filter. So it didn't turn out to be much. In February, Configer, of course, was doing its thing. An interesting, if you're into trivia, Unix clock turned over, the actual Unix time was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0 seconds after January 1st, 1970, so we kind of had a little fun with that. And, pardon? It was on Friday the 13th at about 7:30 p.m., and I was stuck in traffic trying to come home from. I was trying to get home because I actually wanted to see it roll over on the computer, but I was stuck in traffic and I couldn't see it.
Epoch fail.
But that's only a geek joke. Like, only us would understand this.
Yeah, you really got to be into this stuff, right? Also, that same month, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds after January 1st. That magical time rolled over. So we had a little fun playing with clocks back in the. Back in February. For those who are following political things, February was also the month that the Obama administration announced that there would be a review of all cyber policies, the big 60-day cyber review with Melissa Hathaway in charge of it. That's kind of the world I live in. I work at Verizon in my day job. We do this stuff kind of on the side for fun to keep us all handy. And I work a lot with the White House and others in Washington, so we all greatly anticipated this big deal. It took them 60 days to do the review, and it took another 45 days to approve it. So it took a while for it to finally get out of the White House. And even today, we still are awaiting the arrival of the cyber czar, you know, to tell us how we're supposed to do all the things that we're going to do. As this year progressed on, as we got into March, Configer really was kind of going full bore. We also had some interesting data leakage. Do you remember the Marine One helicopter had its blueprint stolen? Where did they find it? Anybody remember? Nutella, yeah, peer-to-peer. An interesting situation there where we have so you win a sticker. when we have classified information or very sensitive information sitting on private networks and you hook it into peer-to-peer, Nutella, Napster, whatever you're using, and this type of stuff now leaks out and it's found on foreign computers because of simple peer-to-peer. How many of you sat through a 401 class years ago and learned that peer-to-peer is dangerous? And here we are in 2009 still having the same problems. It makes our jobs very interesting, very predictable, and we will all have lots and lots of income for years to go because people keep making these simple, stupid mistakes, and there we are. April began, of course, with April Fool's Day. That was the day that Configer was supposed to explode and do all kind of bad stuff. What happened to Configer on April 1st?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing, yeah. It was kind of like old Code Red. Remember Code Red back in the summer of 2002 or 2001 or whenever Code Red was going around, 2001. Yeah, everybody thought it was going to be a big deal. Y2K, everybody thought it was a big deal. I guess Configer was the latest thing for the media to pick up on, and nothing really happened. But we did have a few other things that happened around Configer. Didn't make a lot of press, but we found several hundred medical devices had been infected with Configer. These are X-ray machines, MRI type of devices. They're running Windows NT or Windows 2000 embedded. Nothing wrong with that. You know, you've got a screen that the nurse or the doctor looks at. It's running Windows. Okay, big deal. But when you connect it to a network and that network is further connected to your enterprise network, you're going to get infected. That's just the way it goes. With these embedded systems, there's really no way to upgrade it. So we saw that traffic just by looking at Configer packets as they're going by. They used HTTP GET requests to do updates, and they also passed along in their header information details about the system itself. So it's pretty easy just to look in that
in the HTTP request to figure out that we were looking at medical devices. The medical community was alerted to that. Many of the vendors went into denial mode. Ultimately, they sucked it up and said, yeah, I guess this is a problem, and have started to try and fix it. There was a little worm that went out on Twitter. That was kind of fun. Twitter got interesting there for a day or two. Tax season, of course, was back in April, so we had our normal shenanigans around tax day with the fake tax websites. And about that same time, the good old swine flu got going, the pandemic. And along with that, just like in the hurricane season, we get lots and lots of websites with the fake information, the drive-by phishing, and all that mess. For the second time at RSA, SANS was recognized, or the Internet Storm Center, rather, was recognized by SC Magazine as an award-winning organization. So a few years ago, we were recognized as the editor's choice by SC Mag, which is pretty cool. That was about 05, 06 time frame, roughly. This year, we walked away with the best blogging site, which is, we think is kind of funny because we call ourselves a diary, and we've been running diaries since 1999, long before there was anything called a blog, but yet we've been voted as the best technical blog. Well, okay, we'll take any award we can get, right?
Where is the award?
Where is the award? Yes, Johannes, where is... Yeah. Okay, so do all of y'all know that Johannes lives in a part of Jacksonville, Florida, where none of us would ever go? And D-Shield is there, all these expensive servers, all of your data, all this stuff in this part of Jacksonville. Oh, we're looking at the webcam now, and we're about to see a drug bust here because this is...
No, it's a carjacking.
So it's a carjacking. Okay, yeah. So this is the view literally outside of Johannes' window where D-Shield servers are actually sitting. And it's amazing to be on like a chat channel at night because Johannes is sitting up there with the lights turned off and he's under his covers with a flashlight peeking out and typing into the chat channel what he's watching with the Jacksonville Police Department arresting drug dealers and carjackers. And so if anybody has any rack space, we could certainly... Other than Johannes,
a lot of bandwidth.
It would sure be nice. McCullough, yeah, exactly. So last month, May, after about a year and a half being gone, Tom Liston showed back up again. We thought that we had lost Tom with his Follow the Bouncing Malware series. So Tom's not here tonight, but we welcomed him back with some very interesting diaries that are just a lot of fun to read and try and figure out what's going on there. Also, back in May, well, one of our handlers, SWA, many of you probably aware, SWA puts out the monthly little matrix that shows all the Windows vulnerabilities on the day that Microsoft comes out with all their things. SWA got into a new little pissing contest with Microsoft. Us, the rest of us handlers, we all just kind of back off and watch SWA and Microsoft go at it because, I mean, this is like pure old-fashioned hate. And everybody's trying to be, you know, adult and cordial, but it's just fun to watch this happen. Now, you never see this in a diary. We try and keep it up front, except for May, as in last month. Go back and look at SWA's snide comments about patches to Office 2007 and how they take care of the Microsoft crowd but refuse to take care of the Apple crowd, leaving all the Mac owners completely hanging there naked with 0 days and everything floating. What are you taking pictures of?
Dude.
Me? What, to send a SWA?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, right, all right. So at the end of May, Loftcrack came back. So there's a new version of Loftcrack that's out. Has everybody seen that? Pretty cool. It's got all the updated passwords. You know, you'd think that after years of this stuff, the password cracking would be like, that's so lame, that's so last century. But yet, cracking passwords is probably one of the easiest ways you can still break into systems because people still don't get it when it comes to using passwords. It's probably their only line of defense. So this month, we're only halfway through the month, and already a few things are accumulating. We got word the other day that the Chinese have come up with this weird thing called Green Dam. Have you heard about Green Dam? This is government malware that if you're in China, you're supposed to put it on your computer. Pardon?
Anti-malware.
Anti-malware, yeah, okay.
What it's going to do is block you from all these evil sites like Twitter and Facebook and isc.trans.org and places that they shouldn't be going to.
I might have to get it.
But it's got a vulnerability in it, and there's already exploits out for it. This is really, really cool because now we can create this huge Chinese botnet with all, they're all running green bands, so go figure. Thank you, China, for adding another billion botted computers to a otherwise overpopulated network. Hopefully they're all running IPv6, so we won't see them here in the United States. It'll just affect them. The other things we've seen is, just in the past couple of days, the elections in Iran have been interesting. The media has, you know, completely locked the country down, but yet Twitter is alive. And so information wants to be free. Information's getting out. It's just a matter of time before U.S. coders start injecting some new software into Iran to help them. We've seen this happen in China, where U.S. coders, when China locks things down, they'll start injecting helpful software. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's malcode. We'll just have to see how that plays out. So in about 10 or 15 minutes, I've given you the current state of the Internet. It's been an interesting year, and I'm sure there'll be more fun things happening over the next 12 months. But what I'd like to do now, like we said, we'll start all the way down to the end with Chris, and I've given you guys plenty of things to remember. If you can just, a minute or two or so, talk about something that's interesting in your world, something you've, an incident you've handled, or a bad guy that you jacked up, or when NetDev was abusing you on full disclosure, you know, whatever. Give us a minute or so, and then we'll just make our way down. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, Mark. Do you know what jacked up means in English?
This is America, my friend. There's baseball going on outside. Okay, we notice we don't play cricket here. This is baseball. Yeah. Hey. Hi. No, save that for when John comes out. All right. Yeah, perfect, perfect.
Just your flavor play. That's the funny part.
But we don't have any audio.
It's a sound.
Why don't you narrate? Grab the microphone and narrate, John.
I think
look how expert he looks. He's got that tie on and
the blinds are
without
tone.
Yeah. This is one of our tinfoil hat guys here that's interviewing John.
Yeah.
He did that for 15 minutes straight to get that particular thing.
This is one of our other handlers. We don't let him. We don't let him come out. No, he stays in the ISC bunker.
We had an idea earlier to have him do a co-talk with Alan Power.
Can we get Flavor Flav and Alan Power at the same conference?
Can we do what with Alan?
Get Alan and Flavor Flav at the same
event?
Matter and antimatter.
Yeah, that's like crossing the streams, Joel.
Yeah.
You're not going to cross the streams. Yeah. All right, Chris, we've delayed long enough. Go for it, buddy.
Hi, everybody. I do and have done in the past a fair amount of incident handling and forensics for a rather large global company that I can't disclose. And one of the things that I've seen has been an increase, and I don't want to take anything away from Pedro, who's far more knowledgeable about this than I am, but an increase in stealth technology and some of the malware that's out there, making it very, very difficult to find and literally impossible to clean from a computer. Now, at the Internet Storm Center, we've recommended for years that if you are infected with pretty much anything, the only way to be sure that you are able to actually completely eradicate it is to burn the system down and to rebuild it from trusted media. And after several issues at this company where offices of 30, 40, 50, or in one case 100 people were actually shut down because the admins found some of this malware and insisted that they could clean it, and of course couldn't, and so it just spread farther and farther until the point where it literally choked off all the traffic in an office. After two or three of these events last year, this company finally got the hint that this is really the only way that you can fight this stuff. Burning it down and rebuilding it is the only thing that is guaranteed to work. And that, for me, that was a big plus from last year and the early part of this year, is that this company finally understands at least that part. And since those few events, getting the administrators to very quickly quarantine a malware outbreak before it gets serious, and without question, just burn the system down and rebuild it. And we're talking workstations here. Obviously, servers, you need to handle them a little bit differently. But for the most part, when we have an issue with a workstation, the admins now, without question, just isolate it, burn it down, rebuild it, and we move on. So that's the big thing that I'm taking away from this last year.
Last year, the scariest thing that came to mind was the handler shirt I was wearing. Yeah. But I've now got over that. So if anyone was here last year, I hope you've recovered from the mental scars that I cast around. What I've taken from this year is that I'm no longer surprised anymore when I see amazing things that the nefarious dark side are actually doing to us now. They have far more time and amazingly far more resources than even huge global organizations to survive the continual threat of malware. It used to be that we used to get malware where I work, and we'd analyze it and we'd find out what it was doing. And there were times that we would sit back and we'd think, hey, that was really cool. I've seen some really great things, that was really cool. There was one piece of malware a few years ago, and it's commonplace now, where it tried to circumvent a security control that we put on our internet banking systems, and they did some fantastic things. They screenshot the screen, they screenshot the taskbar, and they sent it all off to Russia. We sat back and we thought, hey, that's very, very clever. But no longer. The malware that we're seeing now is uber sophisticated. We're seeing absolutely immense malware now, and it's really, really scary. But the shock and awe of it now is gone. It's every single piece of malware we're seeing is on a different plane to stuff that we've seen before, and it's scary. Do you want this one?
Okay, I'll take this one. Today I'm actually doing the handle of the day shift, so I'm thinking more of the Iran election stuff, and particularly how Twitter has been used and how easy it would be to insert, you know, malicious URLs in terms of tiny URL and that kind of stuff to say, okay, here's some pictures of some shooting going on in Tehran, a bunch of people click on it, and all of a sudden you're infected. And it gets beyond, or it gets around most of the honeypotting and defenses in terms of detecting malware that we have now. I don't know, maybe Pedro can say some whiz bang stuff that they're doing in terms of AV, but there's a lot of new avenues in terms of leading people to malicious websites that weren't available before. With email, there's anti-spam measures and all sorts of goofy things. You'd say, okay, this is probably not legit. With Twitter, none of that exists, or with social networking in general. So, you know, that's sort of the interesting avenue I see that's probably going to get more play and more interesting exploitation as time goes on.
You shift finish 2 minutes ago.
Okay, I'm not here the other day anymore. I ended 2 minutes ago.
So, first, I'm sorry I'm not with my red t-shirt. I forgot mine in Brazil, but my wife promised that to bring back to me. One thing that from last year to this year that is still constant is when we are talking about cybercrime. Actually, you are all invited for my talk tomorrow at 8 p.m. I'll be talking about cybercrime and actually the malware and the relationship between malware, money, and the cybercrime and the cyberterrorism. That people don't really understand that it's in the rise and it will be continually be in the rise. And they are all really linked with each other. So. I'm from 3 years now. I'm a research malware research scientist from an antivirus company. And as you can imagine, I can see a lot of different kind of flower, and they are really becoming really professional. Of course, there are some cases that you can still see really bad written malware. That's one of the cases that I'm not really a welcome person in Brazil anymore, because I just wrote some days ago in the McAfee Avert Labs blog that the malware writers, coders in Brazil are definitely the worst ones. So I'm not a welcome there anymore. I'll talk about that tomorrow, but cybercrime is there, and it's becoming really, really professional. If you remember the Russian business network last year, or even from 2007, and now they went off for some months and just came back, and the current status is that they are active, and they are really, really professional. So, unfortunately, what I can see is that we will continue to see these things happening, and we have to start to fight back those. I'm not just saying me on you, but the industry and the government. Also, on my presentation tomorrow, we will see that the government are just getting hit even more, and they are not fighting back. So, yeah, that's see how things are going to be. But that's it.
Hi, my name is Joel. I'm kind of the Apple fanboy of the group. And yeah, it's bad. I need pills. And I'm also the kind of the resident IDS guy of the group. I work for SourceFire, who makes Snort. So if anybody knows what Snort is, okay. We'll see. Interesting things that happened this year. Thank you. I like that. Interesting things that happened this year for me was, of course, Conficker. I think that was a fun one for all of us. And basically a non-event for everything that took place during Conficker. The other part that was interesting for me, at least in the recently, was do you guys remember when Google went down not too long ago? Google, yeah. Yeah, Google destroyed itself. Basically what happened was, long story short, is they routed everything, all of Google's traffic through Japan. Whoops. And we were receiving, you know, hundreds of emails and thousands of tweets on the Twitter about it. And I just happened to be the guy on duty that day, which was a bad day for me. So it was an interesting couple of events for me in the past year. It was fun.
It certainly was fun last year.
Yes, it was.
Well, sort of the most notable thing, I think, for podcasts. Yeah, podcasts, they're not actually recording. I forgot to record. But, David is recording back there, so no big problem. Well, got more regular podcasts going, I think, and actually not a daily podcast. But another thing on the defensive side is the Web Honeypot we got launched, which is actually already showing some quite good results. It's a beta version right now. And hopefully we'll soon have some sort of web results. It's pretty much the same concept as the Shield, where we just deploy these sensors and you can run your own sensor. It's a little bit different in the sense that we actually set up some vulnerable looking web applications and then collect the logs from that. So far, we have about 30 set up during the beta phase, and I'm quite happy with the results, and soon we'll share them.
This microphone came round way too quickly. Haven't even thought of anything yet.
We can slow down.
No, that's okay. I'll make something up.
You got a full sheet of notes.
in Australia.
So thank you. Yeah, it's upside down. So for the next half hour, I'll just go through the few things that I have. The few things that I particularly enjoyed over the last year was a couple of the ARP attacks that were going on, the ARP spoofing on someone's internal network, and then wondering why they were getting malware, and they're looking through the logs and they can't find anything, and you know the clients are getting infected and they still can't find anything, and they found out, well, you know, someone's out spoofing and they were injecting malware links in the packets as they were leaving their network. So there was not really much evidence. So that was kind of cool. The DHCP stuff that basically handed out DHCP addresses with some DNS changes, and you ended up on the attacker's DNS server and then getting redirected to other places around the planet. That was kind of cool as well for the last year. The thing about I liked about Configure is, you know, starting to encrypt and digitally sign your malware, your payload on your malware, that's kind of cool. I mean, okay, they got it kind of wrong, but you know, the next version might fix that up. So that was kind of cool. They were kind of the interesting things that were happening over this year. The sad thing, I suppose, is that as an industry, unfortunately, my view at least is that we're still not learning our lessons. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but Zog stood outside his cave watching for saber-toothed tigers God knows how long ago. At the moment, we still seem to be doing the thing where, Zag comes along and says, hey, Zog, go and get a Coke or something, and everything just goes on behind the scenes. It's just that we're just not learning the same lessons, and that's a bit of a sad thing. And in fact, this morning, I had to upgrade a firewall back in Sydney for a client, and I thought I'd better send him an email saying, hey, you've got this rule that says any IP to this particular host. Did you really want to do that? So, yeah, and the little things like that. You know, so, yes, hopefully the next year will be a year where people will not make the same mistakes again. So, anyway, I'll hand over to Mario. There you go. That was a very quick half hour, just in case you didn't notice it time go past.
Hi, I'm Mary Nichols. I think the most interesting thing for me last year was the state breach notification changes. The laws have really changed. People are coming on board. They have the safe harbor laws, and because I work with an international company and mostly in the U.S., but we do have some international work, I had an opportunity to take advantage as a security expert to get more tools and to leverage the fact that the legal department in my company is very large and they were more concerned than usual. So I got a lot of fun tools and good things that I was supposed to have anyway, but now I had some justification for it. I'm on the Alan Power team. I think that security is changing, the landscape is changing, and that there's an opportunity here for us to grow and to change our perspective and do a paradigm shift about where we are in security and to obtain some leverage in the management of corporations and organizations to really push the security agenda. And I think that's one of the biggest things for me. I know the Configure thing was not was kind of a media hype, and we all kind of knew that was going to happen before it happened. But one thing that did come out of this good media hype was the fact that everybody in my company was paying attention to security. And from that point on, I had their attention. And I think that if we all use these adventures to our advantage, we could make it a better and safer place for all of us to use the tools and to prevent some of the bad things that could really happen. So for me, it was a really good year. Deb?
I worked for an ISP, and it was a really bad year. I'm the security administrator, and this year they added another title, abuse coordinator. So I have spent the last year dealing with ID10T. Got my drift? You know the old, we never send you an email asking for your user ID and passwords? That hasn't message hasn't gotten out to my users yet. And I've dealt with, so far this year, 27 breaches in our webmail server security, not so much breaches as ID10T sending their user ID and password, and then the bad guys logging onto our mail server and sending 200, 300, 400,000 spam emails and getting our webmail server blacklisted. And then everybody says, why are we not being able to send email? Anyway, that was one of the things that happened. The other thing that has happened is we are right now really watching a worm make its way through our home computer users' world. And in the last 2 weeks, I have had over 4,000 abuse reports on 10 IP addresses. So right now it looks like we've got a worm somewhere out in our network that's just jumping from one community to the next, and about the time I get one customer cleaned up and get them taken care of, another one comes up, and it's been quite a year. So I think that's been my biggest challenge, and the thing I've learned the most about is that the home computer users still don't get it.
I've got my own microphone. It's funny how that wireless mic's been just kind of making its way down, even though we have wired mics. Whatever. So, I think now it's an opportunity for all of you to ask us some questions. Things, yeah, pass that wireless all the way back down to the end so Stephen and Chris can crawl up in the corner. And
by us, we mean Joel.
Okay. anyway, I'd like to hear from you all. What are your questions for us? What can we get into? What can we talk about? Oh, Chris is going to be Mr. Microphone. That'll work.
This guy's coming up first.
We've already got it. I tell you what would make it really easy. Raise your hand so we can see you or stand up or something. Otherwise, we're guessing. And tell us at least your first name. And don't say Metdev because that's not going to work. We already know who Metdev is.
Hi, I'm Jared from Fargo, North Dakota. So on this end, they start saying that the malware is more professional and more scary, more stealthy. And then you're saying it's the same problems that we've had for 10 years. So can you give us some hope?
These are malware guys.
Yeah.
These are not. it's two different problems. I mean, the first problem is sort of the insertion of malware. And in that case, it's some of the same problems, people clicking on things they shouldn't be clicking on, going places they shouldn't be going to, spamming, phishing. There's some newness to it in terms of social networking, but by and large it's the same thing over and over. The malware itself has to evolve because the antivirus stuff picks up signatures, makes signatures, so they have to, you know, refresh whatever malware that they're using or otherwise evade detection. There's some, you know, VMware virtual machine breakout stuff that's pretty neat that really kind of is a pain to AV vendors. So while they don't have to worry and investigate and do research into how to insert malware into victim machines, they can spend all their time, you know, doing new and innovative things with the malware itself, because we're really not doing the proactive things that could shut down their insertion mechanisms and force them to spend time in doing development and expending resources in that area.
And just to expand a little bit on what John's saying, it's kind of different and it's kind of the same. Over the last year, we probably haven't seen that many real, wow, that's just fantastic pieces of malware. Sure, there are elements of it that are, hey, that's pretty darn clever, but overall the picture doesn't really change all that much.
It's
get to a website, put a link up, pull down a piece of malware, put it on a box, go and do stuff. I mean, that's pretty much the same thing over and over again. The one thing that I did like this year, though, which I forgot to mention, was the malicious ad. So now we have perfectly legitimate websites like, you know,
CNN.com.
Yeah, CNN.com, USA Today, MSNBC, ESPN, etc. And we get a report and say, hey, I'm getting malware off these completely legit sites. What's happening there? And that all turns out to be a...
So in our favorite reporter from USA Today, as soon as we send him, tell him, hey, your newspaper's infected, he goes, how does that work? He wants to write a story about it. I mean, we send him... It's like, dude, it's your own newspaper. You don't ask us how it's working. You should be telling us. Just quick administrative. If you ask a question, you're going to get a sticker. So Marie and Deb are handing out stickers. I also want to recognize David way in the back. Hey, David, raise your hand. David's also a handler, but he's back there geeking out running the audio board. Before we take another question, Johanna, she said you've got some that are typing in over the Internet. So let's take one of those.
Yeah, we do have some questions here that are being typed in the Illuminate room. So I'm just posting them here or speaking them out here, reading them out here to the room. One question that came here from Brad was, what is the current state of email sender verification efforts like DKIM and SPF? And I can't really speak to that. I think it has a little bit stalled, but I don't know. What other thing?
The only SPF things that I've come across in the last year is people stopping me from sending mail out to locations because they put their SPF filters on. But other than that, I haven't. It does seem to do something for some people, but I haven't seen it do a lot for
them. I actually had a client one time. I work in IDS, so I had a client one time tell me that the DKIM header within the email was making the email header too long and thus making the IDS alert and asked me to shut it off. And I said, you know, that's a good thing, right? but I know BlackBerry's on that train, or RIM's on that train, as far as DKIM, but I don't see a lot of people really implementing it or taking hold.
It doesn't have widespread adoption, which is what you need.
Brad Hill's asking here then if it's worth the time to join in.
To join what?
Sure. To do configure DKIM or...
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, DKIM is kind of nice because you might be able to use it to filter out your own NDRs. So if you're getting an NDR back or your non-delivery response back, you can check whether you actually sent it out in the first place. And if you did, then actually deliver it to your internal customer. If you didn't, then just drop it.
Let's move along. Back in the back. Chris, what do you got?
Hey, Mark, just one second.
Oh, we have another answer.
No, you can come back in the first question. Also, if you think about configure and code red, for example, code red from 2001 and was spreading to availability and shares, etc. So we came back in 2009, we have another one making a lot of different stuff, but spreading again through vulnerability, open shares, and adding USB. So configure has a lot of advanced stuff there, peer-to-peer, and a lot of really nice stuff, but it's the same old thing. You see, there's not really new.
Yeah, Paige, remember Nimda?
Yeah, Nimda did that. I was going to say Nimda did the same thing.
Yeah, so that's what, 2001?
Yep.
So everything is old is new, and everything is new is old. We need some cool malware writers to come up with something we've never seen before. So if there's any hackers...
Yeah, they didn't do anything with it. That's what they did.
Yeah, we're like laying down the gauntlet. Show us something new. Give us something new. Yeah, let's go to the back. Okay, we're going to get off track.
I completely disagree with you when you say that there is nothing interesting in the world. I think configure is fascinating. I'm not talking about A, B, but C, D configure. It has the possibility of randomly generate ports, and you cannot predict it. It has the possibility of randomly generate URL.
Plus,
you have encryption units. You haven't been able to break the code of configure. So when you say there is no malware, that's fascinating, I think. We are wrong. I mean, it's fascinating. You have to admit that configure is a smart worm.
And my own take on configure is that wait a year and they'll probably have like a master PhD thesis that reveals that it was configure was its topic and it wrote that worm as a research project.
Right.
Really, I think configure has all the markings of a research project. There's a lot of scanning, but not that much damage. For example, now the latest iteration I've just seen is very probes for SQL injection, but doesn't actually exploit it. It just checks whether or not you're vulnerable for it. So maybe it's really just a recon worm that really...
Well, it reminds me of one we saw before Code Red came out. There was one floating around the Internet that, in fact, this was June of 2001, roughly. had infected almost 20,000 machines, which back then was a pretty big deal. And we thought for sure huge DDoS bot. Well, we didn't have the word botnet yet, but yeah, the least thing. It turned out in the end it was a kid in the UK.
Yeah.
That had built this really cool network for click-throughs, and it engineered it so it would go to websites and click on ads that he had pre-positioned to generate a penny per click. And the guy's making thousands of dollars off of this, you know, this, we didn't really have a name for it back then, zombie network, I guess is what we called it before botnets came along. But it wasn't a harmful thing. It was actually doing good. It's making money for the author. And so it may turn out in the end Configure is either a research project or it was a money-making effort, but so far it's not been used, even with, I think the high point was, what, 13 million infections, something along that line? Yeah, today. But it has never been used for large-scale DDoSes or any type of malicious things that we would expect it to be doing.
And don't get me wrong. I agree. Configure was very interesting, but from our perspective, Configure was just one of the things that happened throughout the year. So when you put the picture together of all the things that happened throughout the year, Configure was one element, albeit interesting. There is lots and lots of other stuff that just, it's the same thing over and over again, and there's a few interesting elements of it, but it's just...
But you are right, there is some cool stuff. The DNS changing was really cool. And whether it's right, we went in trying to block those sites, and then all of a sudden they flipped the switch, and now they're registering hundreds per minute, and you can't defend against that. Right. Sure, and it frustrated ICANN because they wanted to pre-register all these domain names as well, and all of a sudden now it's randomly generating sites that are perfectly legitimate. Anyway, we got another question online?
Yeah, again.
you gotta just plug it in there, okay, Pedro?
But I think the configure is really interesting. The SRI report was perfect.
That's a good point, SRI probably wrote Configure so they can do the research.
But I still think that the best definition for Configure, I think I saw it on Twitter, is that it's like Paris Hilton because it's famous just because it's famous.
Right.
You know, it's not really that thing.
Johannes, got
anything? We have a question via Twitter here.
We have a tweet.
Tweet.
Question is, what are your predictions for the worst malware and attack trends for the coming year?
I think I threw that.
Did one of you guys tweet that from
the way? Let's see, when did you ask the question?
Okay.
So, what was it again? What's the prediction for the worst?
The prediction for the worst malware or attack trends in the coming year? That's our annual question.
Well, you're kind of hearing the answer. It's going to be more of the same. I don't know.
More of the same?
Yeah. More of the same, yeah.
Hardware injections, supply chain attacks, we've already seen happening, so there's really nothing new there.
Here's
jump in, Steve. What do you think is going to happen? Grab a mic.
It's all about money now. You know, the organizations that are behind this are just in it to make money. So the malicious intent's not there. All they want to do is get every pound out of every organization they can. They are farming huge quantities of data about everybody who's online, and they're selling that data, and people are fraudulently using that data to make money.
Yeah.
And it's all about the money.
Yeah. So it'll be driven by fraud and driven by crime, but what about technically?
If you look at banks, they put continually new controls in place to stop malware being defective. And the malware authors are continually leaping ahead to get new methods of screwing the banks for money. So, you know, there was a famous thing that happened there where you live, and this guy said, follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's where malware's going to go.
Social networking sites?
Any way of getting malware onto people's machines and getting their accounts, because people use the same accounts everywhere. If you can get one account, you can get 10, and it will just grow and grow and grow.
About mobile devices? People keep talking about at some point we'll have a big worm that goes through the iPhone.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
That'll never happen.
That'll never happen.
Up until the point where commerce takes place over a phone or a mobile device, it's just not going to happen aside of proof of concept.
So I can walk up to a gas pump now with my phone and wave it across it.
We're getting there. I'm not saying we're not going to get there, but until that's widespread, then they're going to follow.
But what about malware on gas pumps that goes into my iPhone?
They do that now. They put the little overlays, the little card readers in there.
Really nothing new, right?
Yeah, you're host.
Okay, we're your only host. Next question. Ask us an easy one.
Hi. Just a very quick question, but the answer may be
somewhat complex, I suppose. To full question, yesterday we've heard a pretty interesting presentation by Eric and Alan about the 20 critical controls and how our government is trying to now look for the talent and this Americans geeks got talent type thing. I'm wondering, how do we compare to, say, China, Russia, as far as pure manpower and tech skill to deliver real quality of
can we do 10 and 10, I think, is that what he was saying, 10,000 people by 2010, something like that? So what do you guys think? Have we been outclassed by the Chinese? Well, you guys live next door to them.
Yeah.
It's all Australia's fault. I mean, can't you
well,
control your...
Can't you get on a boat and go up there?
Come on, guys.
I don't think we've been outclassed so much as we've placed ourselves in a reactive position, which means that, by and large, we let them win, see what they do, close an avenue, and they've already moved on to the next two or three attacks. So
every day is zero day.
Every day is zero day. Have a big party, woohoo! But by placing ourselves always responding to them intentionally, you know, foundationally, in terms of most of the security that we do, in terms of antivirus, but other technologies too, we're always responding to what the attackers are doing instead of closing off the same avenues of malware insertion that have been taking place for years, if not a decade or more. Until we get to the point where we shut them down where they live and make them respond to us, we're going to keep losing. Some of the malware is interesting. Going back to the question is interesting. The malware itself tends to get interesting and evolving along predictable patterns, sure, but it evolves. But the insertion mechanisms continue to stay the same. People still click on links in email or type in stuff. They click on stuff they shouldn't do in Twitter or Facebook. They go to websites they ought not to go to. And we keep getting owned by the same techniques and strategies, you know, but it inserts new and innovative malware, sure.
But the question is, can we grow more people that can help defend, or are we always going to be outclassed?
I don't think it's a more people problem. It's we always chasing them. As long as we keep chasing them, you can have as many people chasing them as you want all day long. It's not a manpower problem.
So
when you're reactive, you're always going to lose first.
I disagree, though, because you were saying that we're constantly being attacked, and I agree partially, but we're constantly being attacked by people clicking on emails, clicking on links and stuff like that, and I agree, but you've got to think about 6 years ago, it wasn't client-side attacks. It was back in the Code Red Ninja days where it was all server-side based.
Sure.
So now we went from server-side, we went from server-side to client-side. I guess the question is what's next? This is the next question.
Well, 6 years ago, I mean, that was prior to a lot of the, you know, economic-based malicious attacking. What, 2004-ish?
Right.
Was about the real where that started taking off.
Right. People were hacking about trying to get a hold of the database as opposed to, oh, you're stupid. You'll just enter your information in my letter.
Yeah, now we're facing true organized crime.
Let's change the question just a little bit. In Russia, when we saw the collapse of the Soviet Union, a lot of the Russian malware, organized crime, et cetera, that grew in the 1990s, came from people who were very well employed prior to the implosion of the Soviet Union, who literally had to feed their family. And one way of doing that was to get into organized crime, right, malware, et cetera. Does that same phenomenon happen now as we're going through this economic crunch? Are we going to see lots and lots of laid-off high-tech people here in the U.S. and other Western countries that have to feed their families, and so they turn to a little bit of kind of gray side, you know, sling some code and
if Western civilizations economically collapse, who do we steal from?
Well, we steal from the Chinese.
We're financing our debt. We'd only be stealing our own money back.
Well, it's like a Robin Hood effect, right?
Yeah.
Let's go online. What other question do you have?
Let's pick one question here online. Loosening up. Question here from Ray. Now that SHA-1 is broken, what are you using for a hash? More seriously, or how serious is the recent development regarding SHA-1 collisions?
SHA-256,
RIPMD is sort of the quick answer.
There's
no real standard, which is, of course, a problem. But this is working the standard. Personally, I don't think SHA-1 is broken enough that you have to abandon it right away.
Right.
But in new software projects, you probably want to consider SHA-256
It's the same kind of problem.
WPA was.
Yeah, I mean, it's like with desks or any of the older algorithms. It's not that it's bad. It's just that we know it's end of life and it's, and you can exploit it. But exploiting it is not trivial either. So
sure. Well, you combine SHA-1.
You have to earn it if you want to break through.
You know, if you really need a high level assurance, you combine SHA-1 with MD5.
It's, perfect.
You might have collisions with SHA-1, but it'd be kind of hard to get a collision with SHA-1 and MD5 simultaneously.
At the same time. Right.
You combine them both.
Mathematically make it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly correct. From the audience, who we got?
My name is Jonathan. So I'm a network administrator for a lot, several small businesses. And I guess my question is, so if I do everything right as far as having good commercial firewalls, current antiviruses, programs, patch systems, are you telling me that users who just inadvertently click on the wrong thing?
Absolutely.
It's going to take you down.
You can do everything right as a system administrator, and the stupidest user in your organization will bring you to your knees.
It's the weakest link in the chain.
But yeah. I see that.
Absolutely correct. Make sure he gets two stickers, one for himself and one for the stupid user who is going to, tonight, as we are sitting here speaking. Yeah, yeah. One for everybody in his company.
I think this is a great opportunity for us to realize that security awareness is a very important part of what we're doing.
It is, certainly.
If we do not... Thank you.
It's all about the user.
Tell our users what's happening on a regular basis, then they're going to fall for that click here, click there. We have got to take a proactive stance, and we have got to use all methods, intranet, web, newsletters, email, whatever you can do, and you have to do it on a regular basis to inform the users of the most current exploits. The UPS things, the FedEx things.
Sounds like Mary's running for office.
I'm having a little bit of a doubt if you're not just wasting time with all those emails. It's just giving them more links to click on.
That's right.
But to some extent, my attitude is if I can explain to a user, I can have a script do it. So essentially, why do we send all these attachments to the user if we don't tell them to click on it?
But don't you know, one of the things that I think is most amazing this year was that one of our handlers, Donald, has taken to, instead of putting a link where you can just click in his diary, he is making you actually go to the site. Has anybody else noticed that?
Obfuscation.
We
used to provide links to live malware sites too, and then people would always start griping about, but I clicked on the link and I got infected. I'm like, well, you idiot. We say it right there. Don't click this link. Actually, that's the best way to get somebody to click on the link.
Was the handler who used wget on Windows and then found out later that it was just a wrap around in an Explorer?
I think it was Joel. All right, next question. What do we got back in the back? We're right here. Yeah.
My question is a follow-on to the previous. I'm curious if you folks can offer any insight into how much the effectiveness of this crap would be impacted by people running as a restricted user instead of a member of the administrator's group.
Now, wait a minute, Fred. This sounds like a question one of your students would have asked you in class today, and so you're going to answer them tomorrow, right?
You're not as dumb as I look, Mark.
Okay.
So the question is what, running in restricted, you know, having restricted privileges for a user? Probably in the end, kind of minimal. It just creates another barrier for malware to cross over to get administrative privileges to install itself and sink in its hooks. But there are pretty some well-known avenues to kind of get around that to sink your hooks into an operating system. Pretty much once you get any level of privilege on a system, it's just a matter of time and obstacles to get full privilege on a system.
You can always find something that has privilege.
I have a quick story about that. I work for an organization.
You do?
Yeah, we know.
Does it sound like a pig?
We'll just not say which one it was. Wasn't SourceFire, but we'll say. Okay. So this organization is rather large, and what happened was that a domain administrator was logged on as domain administrator and clicked on something innocuous, that appeared to be innocuous, and the whole forest was owned.
Oh.
And I'm not talking about like a forest of like 100,000 users. I'm talking about a forest of 2 million.
Sounds like the Air Force.
They had to rebuild the entire thing. So I don't know as if different user levels give you more privileges. It just makes the user feel more secure, and they can go click on anything because now they have this protection in place. But who do you know that, you know, they get a restriction, they don't just bypass it. Oh, thanks. Yes. Allow. Appreciate it.
Click.
You know.
Yeah. That's why it doesn't work anymore. That's the source
I could not disclose.
All right. There's another question back here.
I will say that the person does not work there anymore. I cannot say whether he got fired because of that.
It doesn't work anywhere, yeah. Should be in Leavenworth.
I mean... It was not SourceFire. We do not run a Windows domain.
Yes.
To follow up on the gentleman's question earlier, which I think is a very, very good one, does anyone here have any hard numbers to say whether running as a restricted user on a Windows endpoint is better or worse than running as full admin? I can see inside of my organization where I have several businesses sitting on the side, one umbrella, I'm sitting at the top, that the businesses that we have, yes, they're running the same AV, same anti-spyware, same patching regime that we have across the entire enterprise. The ones that are running non-admin primarily have markedly, noticeably, small incidents of the common malware that you've been talking about before, the configers, all of those.
I think actually the point here you bring up, like it is possible and not too hard for malware to become administrator or escalate privileges, but it doesn't have to in most cases. And that's why I think that's the one of the wins you get out of running as non-administrator.
It's another layer.
Let me add another thought to that, because you bring up it's a higher level question. What are you worried about in your organization? Is it the spread of malware, which is a pain in the ass to clean up? Or is it like a data breach where your company would be subjected to lawsuits? Or is it, and the reason that you don't have to answer the question, but the reason I'm asking that is the answer to your question becomes an it depends answer. Because if the big threat is data breaches, those generally come from servers, not from client systems. And so while it's important to do privilege control, if you have a small amount of resources and you're putting them all into endpoint security, making sure that you're patching and antivirusing and all that good stuff, and not paying attention to your servers, that's where the bad guys are going to go, because that's where the data is. If that's what, and you've got to answer that for your own organization. So we're all working in a very constrained world, and we can't do everything. And so we have to figure out what is the most likely thing that we're going to lose. What's the most painful for us? And for some organizations, it literally is the spread of malware. That's the most painful thing. That would be the most disruptive. And so that's where you put your effort. And privilege control is one of the best things you can do to prevent that. But don't think of that as the silver bullet that will stop breaches, for example. It's part of it, yes. But remember, we can't do everything. And so you have to figure out where do you put the scarce resources. And it may be that that's one of those areas where you can only just do a little bit because you have to do something else someplace else with the rest of your money you have.
One simple thing, for example, that would cut out the risk of malware to a lot of organizations to almost negligible levels is whitelist all your websites. Yeah. And that would solve a lot of your
problems. Yeah, per business requirements.
Okay, for your business requirements, yeah. I mean, most organizations, when we do audits or pen tests or anything like that, we go through the logs and all that kind of stuff, and guaranteed almost every organization we go into, at least 85-90% of the web traffic has got nothing to do with work. You cut that down to what's only required for the business, and you will have a cleaner network. But I know the reality of life is that people do want to go to their Facebook, their Google applications, their, I don't know, cat of the day or pet of the day website and things like that. So,
well, they want to go to isc.sans.org.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that would be whitelisted.
And they want to follow us on Twitter.
That's your homepage, though. So.
That's right. That should be cool.
Okay, next question. Or do we have an online question?
I have two questions online.
Yeah,
go ahead.
We'll get them.
No, we need to get a couple online ones first.
Okay.
Hopefully this will be quick. With IPv6 slowly picking up steam. Yeah. Are we seeing all the same problems we saw from 10 years ago all over again? Have the vendors cleaned up the stack?
Oh, yeah.
Are we seeing bright, shiny new problems?
Everything that was old in V4 is new in V6.
V6, actually, by the way, the IT.sans.org website is reachable via V6. Yes, you will see all the same problems again. We already saw the LAN attack again. We did see the routing header, sort of source routing fiasco again. We have to learn how to rewrite firewall rules and everything, so yes, you'll see everything over again. My take on IPv6 is, how long do we do IPv4 for now? They're kind of running out of vulnerabilities, so we have to start with something new.
Yeah. Let's take an online question.
You or me?
You guys.
Okay.
Online. Okay.
Come on.
Your question by...
The collision?
Yes. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Net neutrality, limited transfer of specific for specific websites. Will it happen? What will be the response be from the internet independent networks?
Will net neutrality happen? Is that what they're asking? Yeah. So for those who aren't following, there's several descriptions of net neutrality. One is that all the content on the internet can flow equally. In other words, all bits are created equal. That's one interpretation. So if you're running an ISP or you're a transit provider or anything in the core, you make no decisions about a bit other than just switch it. Others look at net neutrality as being equal access, that doesn't matter what kind of content you're providing, from Google down to some little small website, that all content, no matter where it's coming from, will all be treated equally, that nobody can pay for faster service. So, for example, Google could not pay AT&T or Verizon or somebody to give them a fast lane on the internet. Everything's supposed to be equal. Others look at net neutrality as being the government will never interfere. In other words, they will remain completely neutral, that the networks will just run by themselves. So really kind of have to define what is meant by net neutrality, and then you answer the question. So I'm not really sure what the author is asking.
But I don't know, but I'm just guessing here that the author is actually asking about the first one, because that's how I usually see net neutrality, that
all bits are created equal.
Would not prioritize traffic.
So the argument then after that says, what about hazardous things? If all bits are created equal, what about evil bits? What if somebody's RFC compliant and the evil bit in the packet is actually turned on? Is there an obligation there from an ISP or a transit provider to then block or shape or do something with traffic that they can detect as being evil? Or is that an endpoint problem? You know, is it up to you as a customer on the south side of that circuit to deal with it yourself? These are hard policy problems. They're not really a hard technical problem by any means. But, you got an answer, Gunnar?
I'm trying to qualify an answer that's not political in nature and strictly technical, because I wear both hats.
Yeah.
The problem with all the net neutrality proposals I see are, first off, there's really no way to build in security into them.
Right.
You know, BitTorrent, for instance, can be legal. It can be illegal, you know, and some people who think some of the BitTorrent illegal traffic shouldn't be illegal, so we shouldn't care about that. The other problem is that, more or less, at least for consumer ISP-grade stuff, 90% of the traffic is 10% of the users. So net neutrality really is an attempt to not have those 10% that are hogs pay for their usage versus the 90% who don't. So it's a cost-shifting mechanism, or it can be used as a cost-shifting mechanism to people who don't use their internet access have to pay for people who use it too much. And economically, I find that, you know, just incentive-wise, problematic.
Some of us would be interested, and we don't need you to answer it here, but if you think of it, just email the thoughts to us. What are the security implications of a completely neutral network? You know, if Congress passes some law or other governments that mandate total network neutrality, what does that mean from a security impact? I'd love to hear your responses. You don't have to do it here. Just email it to us. Because we would like to know, is there going to be a difference from a security perspective? I mean, at first swipe, it would seem like, because we can do a lot of filtering in the core. But if that's not a problem, let us know if you think so. So just hit us on the contact form. I'd love to hear some of your answers. Let's go on. I know we have a couple more questions back here. Did I see a hand up or two? Maybe not. Any more online tweets?
Yeah.
Oh, we do have one there. Okay, you see.
Hello. I would like to come back to the problem of that stupid user, and I think the only way of fixing that problem is making smart users out of stupid users, and that's done with educational awareness campaigns. But I have to say that most of the awareness campaigns I have seen are pretty boring. So my question to you, what was the most interesting and most intelligent and most entertaining awareness campaign you have seen so far?
Roll-up newspaper works really well.
If you have a magazine, if you're
rolled up newspaper, works quite well.
I mean, that's basically, that's a hard question. I mean, user training is definitely the problem. I mean,
I can tell you one of the best presentations I've seen, and this is really kind of off the wall, was a couple of years ago at DEF CON. I forget who did it, but it was showing Hollywood movies and asking whether it was lame or real. You guys remember that presentation? Who did that? No. Who was that? Anyway, the thing was they were taking Hollywood clips, kind of it was fun and entertaining, but there was a lot of learning there as to what is really going on. Is this really something that's happening online, or is it something that's just kind of made up in Hollywood? And it was an interesting way of teaching awareness by just using movies kind of as the background prop, because most people have seen these things. So it took hackers and it took some of the like war games and some of those, actually pulled scenes out asking whether this could really happen. That, to me, was one of the most interesting ways I could see of actually teaching. The other one was, do you remember a few years back, there was two guys that were making, I think they made three movies all together. We used to show them in SANS classes, The
Matrix.
The Broken. Oh. Do you remember The Broken series? Anybody remember that? Yeah, if you go to thebroken.org, I think they're still online. There's just maybe three movies that have been made. Download those and take a look at it. It's a very interesting twist on how to do cybersecurity education, because they tell a story. They've got some rap music in it. They blow some things up. They show how to break passwords easily, but then they show you how to use a stronger password. And it's another interesting way, particularly for senior management, to show them that this is real stuff that can really happen, but it's set to kind of a rap beat, which is a fun way of doing it. Plus, when they blew up the computer, that's kind of fun too.
There's a comment here from Thomas on the Romans, not a question, but a comment. He says we should add more links to the IC diary, more safe links to give people something to click on.
Thomas wants to click some more. Okay, we'll send some special links to Thomas. Click on.
Well, back to the security awareness. There are some, not to push the state of Virginia because I live there, the Commonwealth. Vita has a lot of good, interesting videos that you can put on your site for free. There's also, if you check YouTube, you'd be really surprised at what you come up with on YouTube.
Yeah, the place that should be doing all this is staysafeonline.org.
Yes, and also ISC Squared ran a contest this last summer, for all kinds of security awareness literature, programs, videos, newsletters, brochures, and those are all still available online too for any of the CISSPs right. that have access to that site. They are completely free.
At one of our clients, we actually ran a competition. We did just a small quiz. So we had maybe 10 slides on security for that organization with some policy questions or some policy items, etc., that we really wanted them to know. And then we put an iPod up. So you do the quiz afterwards, you pass, you get a draw into the iPod. And in a group, an organization of about 600 people, I think we got 3,500 entries, which is kind of cool, which means that people just people just kept on going back to the little 10 questions, because it took them 5 minutes, etc. 10 questions.
Yeah, right. And someone automated that.
Possibly. Okay, so we're getting down to about the last 5 minutes. I want to make sure we answer any questions here in the audience.
Long lines.
To
the next level. They've taken it to the next level. I actually, part of my job responsibilities is community education, and I go out, they pay for all of the materials that I use, but I go out to the high schools, to the middle schools, to elementary schools. I've even gone to some preschools. I go to the community college and I do workshops for the lifelong learners, and unfortunately I'm in that category now, so I fit right in. But I actually go out and do educational workshops, training to try and help people to understand what they should and shouldn't do online. Everybody in this room could be doing that. Everybody could be out talking to the people in your community. I do, during the school year, I do about four a month, four presentations a month. I go within 140 mile radius of home to do the presentations. And like I said, my company makes it all possible for me to do it. They feel very obligated to take care of the kids in our communities and to take care of our customers and hopefully to educate them. So everybody can do it. It just takes a little bit of time.
Question in the back.
In the back.
I guess we'll get to you on round two.
I'm an assistant professor with a college in central Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I am looking at is a lot of students coming out of high school aren't really sure about security, and we're talking about that. I was wondering one or two points that you would like to see really pushed into these students' minds as they come out as professionals in our field.
So this would be any student, not ones who are studying computers or...
That's who I work with most, but certainly any individual within the IT arena.
Well, let me lead off, and then the rest of you guys jump in. There's been a lot of investigations, research into what is failing, what breaks when there are breaches, why did they happen. And the number one problem that we're seeing is that administrators as well as users are not just following the best practices. They're just completely unaware. They don't know that passwords can get them in trouble. They don't realize if you're running a website that SQL injection exists. They don't know that the data sitting on, you know, some hard drive somewhere can be stolen. It's things that we take for granted. Those very simple things do not seem to be connecting for some reason. And so if we could at least come up with almost a like Smokey Bear kind of thing, look left, look right before you cross the street, I mean, just some very simple messages, we can cut a lot of the problems right off the table. I think even just that little bit is part of what we're not doing, because for some reason we think this is a technical challenge and we can't teach technology to everybody, which, as we all know, is horse hockey. You can teach basic safety stuff. Hey, there we go. Perfect. What do you guys think?
Well, I think one important thing is to teach people that just, you know, skepticism, trust no one. You know, there's an expression from, what, a decade ago, on the internet, no one knows you're really a dog. Is that how it goes? Yep. You know, there's far too many people quoting Wikipedia's authoritative sources or something right on the web.
Wikipedia's
no, it's on the internet. You can't trust what's on the internet.
Just,
you know,
teach them that you're not going to win 650,000 million, billion, gazillion.
Well, there is one.
If it's too good to be true, it's not.
There is one website on the internet that you can trust.
Well, ISC.sans.org, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it is your homepage, right?
Well, it should be.
Another thing also is that the technical part, it's easy to get. Also, you have the properties like, for example, stand and et cetera, et cetera. But something that really needs to be pushed to students mainly is the access part, because it's really, really easy to go from the good side to the dark side. So if they have this trait, it's something good, at least to begin.
So we need to demotivate a little bit of that movement from the good side to the dark side.
I think the...
do we have time for one more?
Time for one more, yes, sir.
Hey, my name is David. Yes. From the great state of Virginia as well. My question kind of is based off of some comments that came off of the stupid user and other things like that. How can we tailor education in a day and age where you have social networking sites that not only kind of really indoctrinate people into clicking links, into having status updates, Twitter links, links in Twitter feeds, and things like that. And in addition, where in the future, phishing may not be in the form of your account has been suspended, click here. It's, I looked at your Facebook page, I saw you're interested in kayaking, click here for the newest kayaking gear from this site or the next, and where there's so much more about everyone.
In fact,
online.
That's already happening. Yeah. There are groups that are doing that type of targeted attack.
Scare the crap out of them.
Yeah.
My education is just, show them an example. I'll
tell you what, though, we've got to remember that the generation behind us, we may all think that very cool. We may think that we are cutting edge and we've got it and we understand, but I've got kids. Many of you probably have kids, and you look at what they're doing, and it blows us away because we think we're smart, and they're behind us doing things that we would have never imagined doing at their age. Privacy for them, for that generation, I'm talking the sub-18 crowd and even particularly the 12, 13, 14-year-old crowd that's really got a handle on this. Privacy to them is completely different from what it is to us. What they do with Twitter is completely different from what we would do. I'm on Facebook, but what I do is totally different from what my kids do. It's a completely different world with the same software. So our generation, we think we know it all, but yet we kind of need to watch what the people behind us are doing, the kids. Much like our parents were scared of us as we were growing up, and luckily the Internet wasn't around for our parents, but I don't know that we would want to block them more than we would want to watch what they're doing and see if we can use some of our experience to try and understand that. Of course, provide the mentoring and the guidance, but don't stop them, because there's some pretty cool things that may come out of it by just let them do what comes natural.
And what Mark's saying, the attitude is quite different from most of the generation that I see in the room here. And I'm going to dob Mark in here as well, because he actually told me this story. Someone he knows quite well basically made the comment of but surely only my friends look at my Facebook. And that's kind of a thing as well, people putting their Facebook up and everything, and that's why companies are starting to use it, hey, you've been boozing enough last weekend, well, you're not going to get this job, sorry, bad luck, okay, or there's been cases of companies sacking people because they say, well, the Domino's thing, you had that here,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of...
Yeah, we had Domino's.
Yeah, you had that one, yeah. So things like that, the thought process behind some of these social sites is that it's for me and my friends. Okay, the 999 million other users of the internet, they can't see that page. It's only for me and my friends. So that kind of that confusion getting there as well.
Okay, according to my watch, it is 9:00. So, folks, thanks for sticking around. If you got any other questions, just come on up and see us. And please be sure and bookmark or make it your homepage, isc.sans.org. That's where we hang out. Thanks a lot. Have a good evening and good luck here for your courses. Well, fill out those evals. Did y'all get evals? Yeah, 10 is like the best.
10 is where you should be.
It's a quiz.
It's a quiz. Yeah, the answer to all the quiz questions is 10.
And that forget to get
how many fingers are there?